From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks your business is really, really all right, life. He doesn't create.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, it may not be a happy new year for the industry, but we'll ring it in anyway. John Horn of the LA Times and Michael Schneider, TV editor of Variety, join me to debate the year ahead in movies and television. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
Kicking off 2011 in the entertainment business are the launch of Oprah Winfrey's OWN network and the excitement of the Sundance Film Festival. And there are big changes ahead. The takeover of NBC and Universal Studios by cable giant Comcast, for example. To debate what these stories and others mean for the business are Michael Schneider, TV editor at Variety, and my usual fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. All right, 2011, finally here. We do not know what the year will bring, but we do know certain things that are looming. A strong possibility of upheaval, John, in the movie business, right? I mean, just feels like the studios are burning along with huge overhead and a lot of movies that aren't working and a tough model for the movie business. It just feels like changes are coming.
And they're in a business where they give away half of their income. I mean, if you look at the financial model for movie exhibition, where movies are shown in theaters, half of the money goes to the exhibitor. And it feels in some way, and we certainly have talked about this a lot, that I think this year could be the defining year in whether or not movie theaters become the record store of the 21st century. You know, the record store is obviously supplanted by iTunes and other ways of downloading MP3s. The question is this the year that the movie business and its windows, meaning the space between a film's theatrical debut and its availability on DVD or online, shrinks to some period of time that is immaterial, that it's a week or 2 weeks? It feels as if the momentum is there. There's been some high-end experiments and very costly home theater installations. It does feel to me that this could be the year that there is a huge revolution in the way movies are shown, both theatrically and online.
Movies and TV, Mike?
Well, the revolution probably won't be televised this year. the big question, obviously, is cord cutting. In other words, will consumers decide that they're no longer going to purchase cable or satellite? Are they going to unplug their TV and plug in their computer and basically watch as much streaming for free as they possibly can? Well, so far, it's hard to tell. So far, the experts have said that there hasn't been a lot of evidence of cord cutting, but that's what the networks are trying to hold off and not agreeing to offer their programming to Google TV and to also sort of reassess Hulu and whether or not they're giving up the golden goose by allowing all of that free streaming and possibly introducing a pay model to Hulu. These are some of the things that are going to be hot topics this year.
I think it's fascinating that within television, I mean, television is so much of a on-demand activity. You can set your TiVo, you can watch shows on Hulu, you can really watch your television any way in any medium you want to. And film is stuck in, 50 years ago, that you have to go to the Lemley Sunset 5 at 7:10 p.m. to see the new British art film.
I don't want to sound like the Luddite that I am, but I do have a lot of sympathy for the position of the National Association of Theater Owners, NATO, which feels very strongly and has been fighting very hard that movies aren't records, and that the experience of sitting in a theater is not replicable by streaming the stuff into your house. Now, I think they've already cheapened movies by making them so easily available and so cheaply available on DVD. And when you take it and make it like you can go to the theater or you can watch it at your house, you're risking something that I think is going to be very hard to recapture.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And it does bring up to mind the whole theory of long tail, that if there are 10,000 movies out there, will the consumers actually be able to find them? Or do you need an aggregator, meaning a company that's deciding which 200 movies are exhibited theatrically every year or which movies are going to be on which video on demand site? And I think you're absolutely right. And theaters play a huge role in American popular culture. But I'm just saying, economically, from the studio's point of view, they increasingly don't make sense. And I think, you know, this business is driven by economics, not by cultural experiences. And that's why I think there's going to be a big change this year.
Well, we do have one huge player that's come on the stage in Netflix, you know, which is suddenly making very rich deals with movie studios, which they are now, they're sort of caught between being utterly reliant on the money and at the same time completely terrified of the what they're creating in terms of this big brand now that is going to aggregate and stream all kinds of movies and is already doing it. Mike, what do you think on the TV side?
So on the TV side of Netflix, right now, it's all library product. It's not first-run fare. But I know I've got a lot of friends at the networks who say they're kind of freaked out by this whole model. And the second you actually put first-run programming on Netflix, then the entire network model is thrown out the window. The stations are dead. Affiliates are dead. And the networks themselves are pale shadows of what they once were. So we're dealing with fire here.
The revolution is underway, yeah. I mean, it's a very, very dangerous time. I think, you know, obviously opportunity. But what we do have is Comcast buying NBC Universal, you know, certainly Disney, and it's which is allied with Apple. Steve Jobs is its biggest shareholder. These are people looking to go and stream movies, and they care more about that business probably than they do about the traditional movie business.
Well, and I think this is where, you know, a company like Netflix and their business model makes some sense. You look at a little art movie like All Good Things that has done $4 million through video on demand and about $100,000 in theaters. So it's done, what's the math? Is that 400 times? But anyway, you have huge multiples. Now, this is obviously for niche films. This is for specialized films. But if that economic model works for Netflix, it works for Comcast on its cable channels, I think you've seen the future.
We do see fewer cable subscribers, do we not, Mike?
Slight, but it's not sort of a big enough decline that it's you know, again, the issues of cord cutting may become an issue down the road, but so far we haven't seen a dramatic decrease in people shutting down their cable service. What I will say about the Comcast issue is we've watched this regulatory process drag on and on and on, and what the most frightening thing about this Comcast-NBC Universal merger is what we don't know. We just don't know what delivery systems are going to be hot 5 years from now. And the decisions that they make right now in sort of approving this deal will have impact 5 years down the road in ways that we have no idea. We're talking today. We have no idea what we're going to be watching and what we're going to be watching it on 5 years from now.
Now, one of the things that the theater owners tried to do to salvage their position was to adapt to 3D. And I feel like now 3D TV seems to be kind of, you know, not there yet, but they're coming into focus, so to speak. And it almost feels like the movie business was like, you know, hey, upgrade your theater so you can play 3D and then we'll put the stuff on TV so people don't have to come regardless of what you've done.
But I think in this year ahead, we're going to see a huge backlash to 3D. I mean, I think there's be a certain point where parents are going to look at the pricing, they're going to take their family of four to go see Dolphin Tale 3D, Spy Kids 4, All the Time in the World in 3D, The Smurf 3D. That's like
these are real movies.
These
right,
are real
John?
Movies. These are coming soon to a theater near you. Kung Fu Panda 2 3D. Parents and even some young adults and some older people are going to look at the pricing and say, why are we paying these fees?
And on the TV side, you know, people just spent thousands of dollars in the past couple of years refitting their theater rooms or their living rooms with HD TVs and all the accoutrements. And they're not about to throw those brand new TVs that they just bought 3 years ago just to put in a brand new 3D TV when there isn't even a lot of programming either. So that's still many years away. It's still just very much a gimmick for the early adopters.
In terms of 3D, it's hardly the first time I feel like Hollywood has had an idea and then just trampled it into the ground. And I think we unfortunately, John, we're seeing that with even more sequels and remakes in the year ahead, which seems like almost a death wish for these studios since they seem to be bad at doing this.
Not only are the studios embracing remakes and sequels, but some of Hollywood's best directors are doing the same thing. Brad Bird, who is an incredible animated director,
of course
who did Ratatouille and The Incredibles, is making Mission Impossible 4. Now, I think that is an inspired choice. I'm looking forward to that. But Darren Aronofsky, who is coming off Black Swan, is thinking about doing Wolverine 2. And Mark Webb, who did 500 Days of Summer, a great little romantic comedy a couple years ago, is doing Spider-Man 4. So it's not just that the studios are embracing sequels and remakes. It's that some of the town's really most distinguished directors are doing them as well. again, the slate is incredibly heavy with remakes, sequels, knockoffs, spinoffs. I mean, it's like even TV shows now, Mike, being made into movies and vice versa.
Yeah, I blame you guys on the film side. We've been infected with it on the TV side now. You look at the development rosters for next year, and there's a Charlie's Angels remake. David E. Kelly's looking at remaking Wonder Woman. The Incredible Hulk is in play at ABC. So, you know, everything old is new again.
The Incredible Hulk. This is because Bionic Woman did so well in remake on NBC, I suppose. I guess Hawaii 5-0 did well enough, you know, to justify this.
And you know, you keep trying and eventually one of them will stick. So, you know, it's the same thing with book adaptations. This year, the networks are looking at all sorts of book adaptations. They're looking at websites. And dear God, they're looking at more Twitter feeds as well. And so it never ends.
Twitter and shows based on Twitter feeds, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there are quite a few in development for next year.
Which is bleep, my dad says it hasn't done it all well, but
no, but it did well enough and it got on the air, and getting on the air is half the battle. So I think you'll see more attempts at turning Twitter feeds into TV shows this year.
If you're just joining us, my guests today are my usual banter buddy, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times, and Variety's TV editor, Michael Schneider. We're looking at the year ahead and forecasting what's to come in movies and television. Now, John, we have Sundance in the coming up shortly, and John Cooper, he's the established director, he took over about a year ago, he has gone back to the roots and is shunning some of the bigger commercial things that it seemed, you know, there was the allegation that Sundance had gone too commercial.
Too Hollywood, is that possible?
They went too Hollywood, and now he's saying we don't care if it succeeds or fails. What do you think? Does that work?
Well, I think he doesn't want Sundance to be, you know, the market. That he's happy if films get sold and they are brought to a larger audience, but Sundance in the early parts of this century went completely off the rails. I mean, it was, you just saw people like Paris Hilton collecting swag. You had, you know, movies that weren't really worthy of independent film getting shown there. So we'll see. I mean, last year, which was his first year as directing the festival, they yielded The Kids Are All Right and a bunch of really good documentaries, including The Tillman Story. So it was a good year in terms of limited art house fare. And I think if he is concentrated on good stories and that they're willing distributors to take on those films, it'll be great. But I don't think we're going to see the 10 and $8 million sales that we've had in past years. I think that's reflective of the changes in the industry. But I also think he is intentionally going toward artier and farther away from more commercial films.
You know, when I look at the likely Oscar nominees, and I think we can sort of see at least the outline for the top five, if not the top 10, we do see, surprisingly, given the climate, a surprising number of kind of original movies that are successful. Obviously Inception, but also Social Network, also The Fighter, likely to be nominated. I'd say almost certain to be nominated. And successful not for necessarily just for a little indie film, but, you know, successful. Do you think that this would encourage studios to
I think studios love to have an Oscar or an Academy Award nomination on their shelf because it makes them look and feel as if they're filmmaker friendly. As a business, it's not really always a great business because you might spend $10 million on the Oscar campaign that brings in $8 million in additional business, so you're $2 million in the hole. But if you can look at a company like Summit a year ago that not only won the Best Picture with The Hurt Locker, but also had the Twilight movies, if you can have both the big huge franchise and the Best Picture winner, you can say to any filmmaker, come to our studio because we can do everything. So from where the studios look, that's a great sales tool in terms of how they approach the creative community. But as a piece of business, an Academy Award film is not always a moneymaker.
And let's just get real. They don't care anymore about luring talent by doing those movies that are kind of loss leaders.
That's right. That presumes that they actually want to bring distinctive original filmmakers into the fold, which some studios might not want to do.
Or they figure they can still name their terms because these distinctive filmmakers don't have a lot of money kicking around for them to spend on movies. And I don't see that changing in the year ahead.
I don't think so. I mean, I think a better way of looking at the movie studios is they're basically FedEx. They're in the package delivery business. You know, they're shipping somebody else's goods. If a studio can get, like Warner Brothers does with Legendary Pictures, a deep-pocketed investor to underwrite their slate, the studio is going to make their money off their distribution fees. And I think as long as that money is out there and it's not always accessible, the studios prefer that model because they have less capital at risk. And if the movie's successful, they can make a lot of money just selling it wherever it's sold.
It feels to me, and I don't know if it's in the year ahead, it may be in the years ahead, that this model you're talking about, which we see strikingly with Disney and Paramount, where it's like, bring me a movie and I'll distribute it and take some money for that. It just feels to me that it's that the herd thins. I don't know that we sustain. We're now down to essentially five majors, major studios, Disney, Universal, Paramount, Fox, and Sony. I just don't know that we can keep that going, John, with that kind of model.
I agree. And it, without some infusion of outside money, I think that's absolutely true.
Now, in terms of on the TV side and the movie side, one of the huge stories of the year to come is that we can assume that NBC Universal will finally complete its deal with Comcast, this merger. And that's not just the broadcast network, but all of the big cable channels, USA,
right. And that's
Bravo.
The real prize. The cable networks, obviously. USA, the number one cable network, again, in prime time. It's that's the huge get for Comcast.
That's the jewel in the crown, for
absolutely.
Sure. And there's no management change there. Bonnie Hammer, who runs that, is not. She's adding some stuff to her portfolio.
She's untouchable, yeah.
So that's not where I think the eyes will be focused. They'll be focused at the network where Bob Greenblatt from Showtime, where he put on hits like Weeds and Dexter, will be taking over. And this guy, I've never seen such goodwill, I think, to an executive coming into a job.
Yeah, well, he's a very likable exec. The town really enjoys working with him, and he's got a string of successes going back to his days at Fox, even before going to Showtime, and then as an independent producer as well, having produced 6 Feet Under for HBO. This is a guy who is coming into shambles.
He hasn't talked much at all about what he's planning because right. He hasn't officially in the job, but I did get a chance to ask him a couple of things, one of which was, does he feel confident about the future of broadcasting, which he kind of has to say yes to, and he did, and also how he feels about programming at 10 o'clock because the 10 p.m. hour has been a real big challenge for the networks.
Yeah.
And he did express confidence that he can do it. I don't know. Do you think that can be done?
10 p.m. is tough. You're competing against, first off, people are watching TiVo now at 10 o'clock. So the time shifted programs from earlier in the evening, people are watching at 10, and cable is very aggressive at 10 o'clock now. And you've also got local news on some stations that are taking away older viewers. It's a very competitive hour, and the networks have been suffering. And NBC, of course, did itself no favors 2 years ago when they brought in Jay Leno to the hour. They're still trying to recover from that. But ABC, CBS, not doing much better at 10 either.
No, it's a very tough time slot. On the film side, John, we don't know what these guys are going to do, but it feels you wouldn't buy any green bananas if you're an executive at Universal, right?
I want to give their team a little bit of time because they are relatively new to the job. And as opposed to GE, which was not really in the content business, Comcast is at least ostensibly a creative company. So from the way the Universal executives I know see it, it can't be any worse than it was working for GE. But I agree, the clock is ticking and they are going to have a lot to prove in a very short period of time.
What do they have coming?
Well, some of their bigger bets include director Brett Ratner's Tower Heist with Ben Stiller and Eddie Murphy, long in the works heist film, Fast Five, yet another Fast and the Furious film with Vin Diesel, your favorite actor.
Kim. Yeah, I love him.
Ron Howard's The Dilemma. And then there's a Judd Apatow movie, Bridesmaids. So it is kind of old news, good news, same news. We'll see. I mean, it doesn't have any blockbusters written all over it, but that's what we're going to wait to see what happens.
What movies and TV shows are you looking forward to this year? Tell us on the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness or post your thoughts on our Facebook page. Coming up after a short break, John and Michael weigh in on the stories they're most looking forward to covering in the year ahead. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and kcrw.com. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Looking ahead to 2011, we're certainly expecting some more of the same. More movie sequels, more remakes are in the works, but we expect to be surprised. Who could have predicted the Conan debacle of the past year? Joining me to imagine the year to be is my usual banter buddy, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times, and Michael Schneider, TV editor for Variety. Now, we do see a couple of big names who have come from the broadcast world, notably Oprah Winfrey and Conan O'Brien, going to the cable world. Oprah is launching OWN, the Oprah Winfrey Network.
Right.
Really,
bow down.
Really bumpy launch. Lots of roadkill on the way to that. And Conan is gone to TBS. Do we think that this transforms cable?
Well, cable already has been transformed, so this sort of furthers it along. But as we saw last year, Martha Stewart moved over to Hallmark Channel and immediately collapsed. She did not do nearly as well as she did in broadcast. So, you know, these transitions are not without peril.
I think absolutely. I mean, it's one thing to run an incredibly successful syndicated show as Oprah did in an empire, but to program a whole network.
It's going to be bumpy. If you look, you know, Oprah was a part of the founding group that launched Oxygen back in the year 2000, and that network had several years of bumps before they finally figured out their mojo. And at that point, Oprah was not even involved anymore, and it eventually morphed into the network that plays shows like the Bad Girls Club.
Well, I was going to say it didn't exactly catch fire and change the world.
Right. Right. But that's the thing with Oprah is trying to do something that's much more uplifting and spiritual. And will that sell with the viewers?
We'll see. Jersey Shore world.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, maybe we will soon find out what she is launching pretty much as we speak. We will see.
January 1st.
John, what do you think in terms of cable versus broadcast? Do you sit down in front of your TV and think, I'm watching broadcast because it aggregates more eyeballs?
No. In fact, I generally don't even know what time the shows are on that I'm watching. I mean, I set my TiVo, and then when I have time, I go watch it. I'm totally delivery system neutral. It just will turn up when I have time to watch it.
And I think for young kids, you know, for everybody you talk to says that their teenager only watches online.
Oh, yeah. They don't know what a broadcast network is. But the scary thing is they don't know what a network is, period.
And that is scary. I don't know what that implies. I think we can agree that in the year ahead, at least, the models more or less continue as they have done. But the trend longer term has got to be freaking terrifying to these people.
I think so. And again, you bring up the idea of Netflix and Google TV, and it's enough to cause a network executive to,
TikTok.
Convulse.
Yes, TikTok and all of this stuff. Now, in terms of the year ahead, though, Fox will have to do without Simon Cowell. He's going to come back with The X Factor. Certainly, that's untested. And American Idol, dramatic transformation. And, you know, Mike, just a minute on how important Idol has been for 10 years to Fox.
Well, Idol is like football. It's like a Super Bowl, but every night. And for Fox, that's been incredible. Fox has been the number one network among adults 18 to 49, which is the demographic that advertisers still care about, for several years now, thanks to American Idol. This is a show that comes in, it steamrolls the competition. And even now, even in its 10th year, with all its declines, is still a force to be reckoned with.
Now, some of the other networks are jumping in with singing competitions of their own. But interesting, what's interesting to me, without getting too granular, Fox is moving Idol's night. You know, for years now, I think there's been a covetous eye. NBC had that incredible Thursday night comedy lineup, which they forfeited with their weak programming. CBS started to build a beachhead by putting Big Bang Theory on Thursday night. And now Idol has moved, and that's going to have an impact, right?
Yeah, it definitely will. You know, CBS had been doing quite well on Thursdays with Survivor and CSI, but CSI was starting to weaken, and Survivor's getting old as well. So they smartly moved the Big Bang Theory to Thursdays this year to sort of bring a comedy beachhead to the night. And, they're doing just fine, and along comes American Idol now. And for Fox, it's smart because they have a little show called Glee on Tuesdays at 8 o'clock, and that show's been doing pretty well for them. So to move it at this point would have been a little foolish. And with Idol, the bloom off the Idol rose a little bit. It was time to shake things up and maybe enter the Thursday night fray.
Meanwhile, NBC is going for comedy. They're going to be running 30 Rock and Outsourced at 10 o'clock on Thursday night. That's a new initiative to try sitcoms at 10. What do you think?
Yeah, the conventional wisdom has been generally don't put sitcoms on at 10 because you're daring your audience to leave at 10:30 when the first show ends. And so you automatically have a smaller audience going into the 11 o'clock news. But it's worth a shot, I suppose. ABC is actually going to be doing the same thing come spring on Wednesdays when they're going to air two comedies at 10 o'clock. So we'll see. It's obviously what's been happening right now at 10 o'clock ain't working, so why not try something different?
You know, in this year to come, all the guilds will have their deals expire. The directors and the screen actors have actually already made their deals, and the writers are yet to come. Now, we bantered this a little while back, that John seemed to, you seemed to feel that the writers might rise up on their hind legs and fight a bit. I'm skeptical, because so far, you know, the Directors Guild, which is never a big fighter, has made a deal with the studios.
Never a big fighter. Never a fighter,
okay.
Period.
Doesn't
okay.
Fight. Why should they? Life is good for them, I guess. And the screen actors, you know, they've gotten some real meat and potatoes kind of improvements in compensation, but none of the stuff that they supposedly wanted, you know, so badly in terms of new media. But what do you think, John? Is there going to be a fight?
I just think writers are contrary by nature, speaking as a journalist myself, not as a screenwriter. And I think the Writers Guild will look at what the other guilds have done and probably take something away from them. I still feel as if the guilds believe at some level that they are not going to share in the advent of digital distribution and online entertainment. And maybe the horse is out of the barn and maybe they can't fix that. I think the Writers Guild knows that they lost the fight on DVDs and video and they don't want to do it again. And I don't know if they have the votes, they have the momentum, but I don't think they're going to go down quite as quickly as the actors and the directors did. I don't know they'll go on strike, but I think they're going to put up a little bit more of a fight.
I agree with John for the most part that there definitely will be much more debate and much more sort of concern over what's going on. But I think also we got to remember that the impact of the last strike still can be felt, especially among a lot of writers who no longer have deals and just the fewer deals that are at the networks these days and studios. Everyone remembers what happened and they're still sort of nursing those wounds. So it's tough.
One thing we know, we hope we'll have in the new year is a new head for the Motion Picture Association of America. That chair's been vacant. We've had Robert Pisano acting, and it seems to be like nobody's quite even sure what the job is. Difficult job, right, John?
Difficult job. I mean, you're dealing with ultimately competing constituencies and that the studios are in some ways going up against each other, but they do have united concerns. Piracy.
Definitely
and China.
Very big. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they're related. But China, the world's most populous nation, essentially closed to Hollywood. And then piracy is obviously a huge drain on the movie business. But the other thing, and I think last year proved this, the rating system is in serious need of repair. I mean, there are stories about movies being rated NC-17 that probably should have been R. Blue Valentine.
Harvey Weinstein got that reversed, which is an unusual thing. But
movies
yeah.
like The King's Speech rated R that I would take my 10-year-old to go see. And then there's movies like Toy Story 3, which was rated G, which had an incredibly intense scene involving an incinerator and toys falling to their potential death.
And a terrifying red-eyed monkey.
But it really felt like last year the rating system became almost useless. I mean, you have to go, as a parent, you have to go to so many other data points to figure out whether or not a film is appropriate for your young children. You might have to go see the movie yourself. And then there's certain films that are rated, I think, seemingly arbitrarily. And I think Joan Graves has even told you that there are problems in the rating system.
This is the person head of the ratings board, yes.
And that's probably going to be a low priority for the new head of the MPA, but as a parent, it's a high priority for me.
I have to say there, it does feel like a tipping point was reached. The fact that they did concede and reverse themselves on Blue Valentine suggests to me that they may sort of know it. So thank you, Mike.
Thanks a lot, Kim.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That is the year ahead. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Matt Holtman is the executive producer. To leave a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can also stream and podcast the show and check out past episodes. You can also leave a post on our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.